As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Join us this Saturday for an all-new episode of The Athletic NBA Show, Saturday Slam and Jam, hosted by me, Andrew Schlecht. I'll be joined by my co-hosts Alex Spears and many of the Athletic beat writers that you know and love. We will recap the week of the NBA, play some NBA trivia, and just overall talk about the league that we love most. So while you're flipping your flapjacks, tending to your yard, or just sipping your coffee on Saturday morning, listen to Saturday Slam and Jam on the Athletic NBA Show.
Roger, TV circuit breakers in. Stage 5 clear.
Roger.
And we're getting a picture on the TV.
Do it again!
Yeah, go for it.
Dude, I had a weird interaction. I just gotta say this. I had a weird interaction with a guy affiliated with our bank when it came to because we did like a little loan to do some housework, and this is crazy. Are you guys encountering this with anybody where maybe it's the pandemic, but you're having customer service interactions that just go left in a way that you couldn't have possibly have even fathomed? If you guys had any of that.
Well, what happened? You didn't say hello?
So.
You got that in me.
Is that Seinfeld? So.
Did you say hey?
Yeah, I'm trying to like summarize it and cut out the minutia of it. Basically.
You?
Yeah, I know. You. Yeah, this is. We'll get to this later. We're on the email. You're killing me for how I handle the podcast. As somebody who enjoyed the podcast, but
oh, that was great.
It's classic you, classic. But okay, so I was basically pawned off a little bit on this guy to handle the loan because the woman who usually handles it had been promoted, and. He calls me with this deal. Money's so cheap right now. We're talking, you know, 1.5% interest for 1 year, and then it goes on up, and yay. And I just started asking him questions, you know, after the emails. And I go, hey, so.
Hey, what does it mean when it's this? What does it mean when it's like amortized versus non?
And he just goes off on me, dude. It was so bizarre. He goes, I feel like I answered that question earlier. I was like, look, I'm no financial whiz. I'm just trying to go over it, you know, make sure I've got it rock solid. He goes, it's just, I feel like it's just frustrating. I'm just frustrated because I feel like I sort of answered that earlier. And, you know, I'm just really frustrated. I'm just really swamped. I just go, dude, I don't care if you're frustrated. That's not really for me to know. I actually told him, I just said, we're not friends.
Right.
like we're not
like
friends.
You don't understand how this shit works, bro? Like you asking for my business. I'm trying to give you money, bro.
Yeah,
I'm trying to help pay you pay your bills.
Yeah, we could just do an Ameritrade account. We don't need our money handled by this particular investment bank. And then he starts backing off. I mean, we're just animals, I guess, where if somebody's pursuing us, you pursue an animal, the animal runs, you know, if you start running away, the animal chases you. Like he was really aggressive. But once I went from nice guy to, I think, appropriately pissed off about it, that it's all backing up. And then after the conversation, he calls me back with this awkward apology and then asks if I want to talk about the loan again. And I'm just, dude, I don't think so. I think we just have to take five on that. And I think we need to pick it up later. But stupid, just bizarre, fuck. Bizarre stuff, man.
George is getting upset.
You should have did the one more time here.
What's the one more time for his? Oh, yeah. So wait, are you telling me that you're really apologizing?
Listen, okay,
I got that. Like, so you're profusely apologetic. So does that mean that you're sorry?
And then I know you do that, and then you say, "I don't." 1 second. Oh, that's what it is. No, I'm good.
You know what? No thanks. It's a weird thing, though, because I did tell him in the apology. I guess it's better than nothing. I just said, "Well, I appreciate that you apologize. That's good, but we're not going to continue the conversation." It's just such a strange situation. Oh, okay. Podcast. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Well, we've discussed this. Here's the feeling. You got a greeting. It starts with an H. How's $20 sound?
I'll take it.
All right, sir.
Welcome to the House of Strauss on the Athletic Podcast Network.
Stars hang with stars. Winners hang with winners.
About my Coyote
Hill. Welcome to the House of Strauss podcast. I am delighted to be joined by fan favorite Amin El Hassan and, of course, Jade on the keys. This is a special edition, folks. This is a fairly immediate reaction to the trade deadline and wherever else you want to take this. How you doing, Amin?
I'm all right. You know, like, trade deadline is always a weird time because at first you're like, keeping up. Okay, he's going there. All right, got it. He's going there. And then at some point, the fire hose turns on, and I'm just like, you know, I'm drenched and I'm drowning. Just let me know when it's all over, when you turn it off, where everything has landed. So yeah. As we sit here recording, I think I have a strong idea where everybody landed, but I'm pretty sure I'm going to find some surprises along the way.
You haven't penciled in all the salary clearings and the trade exceptions. And
well, I'm not even talking about that. I'm talking about like maybe 5 minutes before we started recording, I discovered that Marquise Chris was traded for someone named Katie LaLanne, which sounds like a heartthrob actress from like the 40s and 50s.
Oh, yeah.
Starting a lot of Westerns, starring Katie LaLanne.
Who plays in Korea, I believe.
Yeah. Oh, Katie LaLanne?
Yeah. In real life, not the Western star. I was thinking, star.
Like, the movies played in Korea? That's a nice twist. I didn't think
it's sort of like a WSO thing. It's sort of a Bob Hope comes with Katie LaLanne
USO.
To rally our boys.
What is WSO?
USO. Was it WSO? No, USO. It was USO. Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. I'm off by a letter. Yeah, I apologize.
Bob Hope, and then, like, hey, boys, let's hear it for Katie LaLanne. And everyone goes from applauding to
they're whistling.
Not whistling. Wolf whistles.
Wolf whistles.
Where you put the fingers in your mouth. And whoop, whoo, ow.
I've seen it in those training films. No, I have real good news for you. I want to tell you guys the country's behind you 50%. What else is new? Oh, yeah, Santa Claus is resting up at his ranch in Texas. And I have good news for you Catholics. It's official now. You can eat Spam on Fridays.
She's a lady, but gentlemen, fellas, check out those gams. Katie LaLanne. That's a good call, but hopefully a good player down the road or part of some machination to clear up some salary because the Warriors have the biggest luxury tax bill in the league. You know, it was a more active trade deadline than I thought it was going to be. You know, it seems like it really came on strong towards the end, and maybe meaningful, Amin. Maybe meaningful. It seems to me, I'm reminded of Kevin Arnovitz's rule that you need grown-ass men to win basketball games. It seems like teams that are in contention or on the fringe of contention added solid veterans that could potentially get them there. That maybe they're not the favorites. And the favorites, that calculus hasn't changed. And in the East, you're going to say Brooklyn in the West. If healthy, caveat, 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 you're going to say the Lakers. But if you subscribe to the belief that it's a little out of sorts right now and it's a little unpredictable, it does seem like the Nuggets made a move that could help them. It does seem like the Bucks made a move that can help them. It does seem like the Heat made a move that can help them. And it seems like the Celtics did as well. Do you disagree?
You're going to have to catch me up on some of these deals now. Now, what did the Bucks do?
I believe the Bucks got PJ Tucker.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought something happened today. And I was like, oh, I didn't even see the Bucks come up today. Okay. So, look, do this. Do me a favor. Whenever we talk about these deals, just say the names of people. Right? So it feels like the Bucks got better get PJ Tucker. It feels like the Nuggets got better getting Aaron Gordon. It feels like the Celtics got better getting Evan Fournier. Right?
Yeah.
And the Heat got better getting Victor Oladipo and LaMarcus Aldridge.
You're not Shaq level with your knowledge of the NBA, but I don't totally know the Aldridge situation though at this moment.
This is the problem with doing a podcast right after the trade deadline passed.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. I'm just kind of like Joe Gatto on the Impractical Jokers when he's pretending like he can't, the floor is too slippery. I'm like, whoa, like a cartoon character. But yeah, people are going to say, oh, he don't even watch, he doesn't even pay attention. Well, look, it's hard, man. It's hard.
Yeah.
I need a couple of days.
We're older now, too. It's just the mind can only cope with so much. I do see, at the moment we are doing this, the Heat are the front runner for Aldridge. Let's talk about the Oladipo move. I kind of like that. It's a very Heatsy gamble, isn't it? This idea that you've got a veteran of some talent who maybe wasn't in the correct situation, maybe some issues with the body. Maybe you give him that magical Miami juice. Perhaps we'll get you over the hump. Yeah. How do you feel about that one?
Yeah, so Oladipo's a funny one because I didn't think that there would be a trade market for him. Mainly because if you look at what he's done in Houston, right, where he's had the most opportunity to do stuff, it's been, quite frankly, not good. I know some people are going to look and say, oh, but I mean, he's averaging 20 points a game. He's back, right? Like, he's back to his all-star caliber level. Well, he just recently went north of 400. He was shooting about 397 for much of that 10 years, 20 games in Houston, 32% from three. He's not really getting to the free throw line. Not enough. Only about four times a game, despite playing almost 34 minutes a game. Defensively, he's nowhere near what he was prior to the injury. So I was just of the mind that if I got Oladipo, I'd be happy. Yeah, but like, what would I have to give up for him? Now, obviously, the Miami Heat ended up not having to give up much. They gave up, Kelly Olynyk and someone else? See, again.
The naming rights to Kevin Pelton's trade column.
Let me do this. All the trades in one place. All the NBA trades in one place.
2022 first round swap rights.
There we go. Deadline tracker.
And Avery Bradley.
There you go. Yeah. So Avery Bradley has been a guy that really hasn't played much for them this year. He's been in and out of the lineup due to COVID and other kind of stuff. Olynyk has similarly, not because of injury, but more just being part of Eric Spoelstra's kind of yo-yoing of him. Sometimes the dude starts and sometimes he doesn't play that much. And he really hasn't shot it particularly well. Only 31%, I believe, from three this season. So you basically got rid of two people who were non-contributors or fringe contributors so far this year. And you got a guy who, if he can get back physically to where he once was, is an absolute steal. Because, by the way, the pick swap is just a waste of everybody's time. There's no chance Houston's going to be better than Miami next year. There's zero chance, right? So
they're so bad.
You know, I mean, like, we honestly, this whole podcast should be just how Houston completely fucked up this Harden thing. Because you could have had Caris LeVert. You could have had Caris LeVert, and you chose to flip him for a dude who was not playing well, who was coming off of a serious injury, who was a impending free agent, and who ultimately rebuffed your efforts to re-sign him to what I would call a very generous contract for someone who's playing the way he was playing. And you did all that because you swore to everybody we'd only trade Harden for an all-star, and you needed an all-star to show for it. And even though everyone and their mama knows that Caris LeVert is a better prospect on a cheaper contract with more cost certainty and a huge, bigger upside, You tricked yourselves into believing that this guy was the thing, turned out to be the thing, and when you try to flip him, you barely got anything for him. You got
and
a
why
guy,
would you hold yourself to the idea of you need an all-star back? I mean,
because
that's not...
your owner is a fuckhead. That's why. Or, excuse me, operates with the consistency of a fuckhead. I mean, I'm not calling him a fuckhead. I'm just saying he has the behavior of a fuckhead when it comes to owning team.
I think Henry might have insinuated mob ties for that family. So
there are mob
careful.
Ties, but not for him. Like it's one of his cousins or something like that. Allegedly.
I mean, it's a disaster. And everybody's making the obvious observation that it's incredible that Harden has been involved in two terrible trades for his services. But it really does put the Thunder and Presti off the hook historically, that this one is just so bad. It's worse. It's hard to conceive of it somehow becoming better now that this is the haul ultimately.
I'm sorry. Can you repeat the question?
The Harden trade, the sequel, is worse than the original.
Let me say this. The original was
they got Steven Adams.
They got Steven Adams. They got a couple of picks. They got Kevin Martin. They got a decent haul for what he was at the time. So then obviously he turned into something much greater. But again, what people seem to misremember is that he didn't want to stay. It wasn't, you know what? Let's trade this Harden dude. I don't know about him. It was the guy requested a deal. He requested to be traded. I've talked to Kendrick Perkins about this, and I said, Perk was on that team. I said, Perk, didn't you try to talk him out of it? And he said, from the end of the finals all the way up until the Olympics, I felt really good that he was coming back, and Perk was like, I'm not here to tell you how much is the right amount. You get whatever you can get, but I think the place for you to be is here because we're on the cusp of winning a championship. And he said Harden was all in on that. And he said Harden went to the Olympics. When he came back from the Olympics, done. Dude, I'm out. And obviously the Olympics is an experience, particularly for a young player. Because you might think of yourself a certain way. And then you go and you're practicing every day with the elite of the elite. And you say, wait a second. I'm every bit as good as these guys. I am not lesser than. I don't need to be a sixth man or a third wheel or whatever. I can be the franchise player. And he was right. And obviously Oklahoma City was not going to make him a franchise player. And they were right to not make him a franchise player. But this idea that like somehow, oh my God, that's all you got for Harden. No, everyone knew at the time, no one knew at the time that that wasn't a good enough deal. Now, this one is more tied to, man, you got a bunch of draft picks for a team that has three all NBA caliber players. As an individual basis, I don't know if any of these picks are ever going to be good for you, bro. We're talking about 25 and under, pretty much.
I still want to go back in time a little bit to Harden trade one. I do wonder if they square peg round hold him a bit, that because he superficially had the qualities of a Manu Ginobili, and because Presti came out of the Spurs, that there was this idea of, well, this guy's our Manu. Left-handed, gets fouled, play at the end of games, bring him off the bench. And that was just never tenable considering his personality. And maybe they went about it the wrong way. And maybe they responded too much to incumbency by making Westbrook the guy who obviously starts when I think we can say, looking back, James Harden's better than Russell Westbrook. I mean, I think that's something.
But
is that controversial?
No, but well, I would say it is controversial because people today will argue with you about who's the better player. Not right now, but maybe let me finish my point. People today in modern times, like up until a year ago, I would say, or maybe the year before Westbrook got to Houston, let's say that. Up until that point, there were a lot of people who would argue with you on that. I don't. I've always felt like Harden was the better player. But there were people who would argue vociferously against that 2 years ago, right before he got to Houston. Back when Harden got traded from Oklahoma City, nobody. Nobody had that.
Some people that the nerds
had he was a better fit. People had he was a better fit, but not a better player.
There were nerds who thought he was a better player.
Find the article. The nerds love to write about like the shit that they believe, right? So fucking find me the article. But
I'm looking up articles.
Yeah. But nobody had him as better, just flat out better than Westbrook in 2012. Nobody. Dude, Westbrook was all NBA. What are you talking about? Harden wasn't even an all-star.
Well, we are disagreeing over it's like a minor disagreement. What I'm trying to say is there were people who thought that, but they were a very small contingent. The overwhelming consensus is what you were saying, especially after how terrible Harden was in the NBA Finals right before
all right, so let me do this because we started this conversation around what Presti thought. Because I don't agree with your assessment that Presti thought it was Manu. I guarantee you, Presti, if you told him, and also he didn't play well in the finals, Presti would point out they beat the Spurs because Harden bust their ass.
Yeah.
They were down 2-0 in that series. And everyone thought, here come the Spurs again. They're doing it again, right? And the Thunder end up winning 4 games in a row. And those 4 games were when Harden went supernova. No, he didn't play well in the finals. But this is like saying Michael Jordan is 6-0 in the finals, and that's why he's the best player ever. So we're not going to talk about all the times he didn't make it to the finals. We're not going to talk about all those other rounds where he fucked up. Okay, right? Same thing here. Like Harden, oh, he's terrible in the finals. So we're not going to talk about all the clutch-ass performances he did on the way to get them to the finals. We're just going to ignore that. It's kind of silly.
I agree.
Part of it is like Harden played well. They knew what he was. They knew how good he was. And what they were trying to do was keep everybody together. They were trying to keep everybody together. So they got Serge Ibaka quick because he signed, I want to say, 12 and a half a year. So it was like a $50 million over 4 years. And it's like, okay, how can we do this financially to get it right? And they lowballed Harden, which probably dampened his enthusiasm to sign the deal, made him wait on it. By the time they got clearance to give him the max, he was like, I'm done. I want out. Because he'd already been confirmed in his mind, I am not, forget about Russell Westbrook's subordinate. I may not be Durant's subordinate. I'm his peer. And if I'm going to be his peer, then I need to be somewhere where I can prove that.
And then those first 2 games with the Rockets was just an ultimate confirmation. And people could say,
okay, skip.
Small sample size. What? What do you mean, okay, skip? Because
this is exactly what I was going to Well, I thought that James Harden was just a sixth man. And I thought he made the biggest mistake in leaving. But then I saw those first 2 games and I knew he was a star. Like, that's not how that shit works, man. I mean, it worked in that case, but.
Dude, I talk about it often. It's something Billy Beane calls signature significance. Not Billy Beane. I meant, God, what's the guy who wrote the books that influenced Billy Beane? Billie Jean King. It was God, why am I drawing a blank on this? The sabermetrics guru, man. The man who invented it all.
Michael something.
James. Baseball.
Bill James.
Bill James. Billy James. Thank you.
Billy James.
Invented a signature significance. It's the idea that if you do something once at such a level, you're probably pretty damn good. And I think it's based on this idea of pitchers who would struck out X amount of guys in a game included, and it's like 90% Hall of Famers. And so I think that was a good example of that when James Harden, I can't remember if it was the Pistons or whoever else, it was like around 40 points two games in a row. If you do that, it's probably not a small sample size thing at that point. I think that was a good example. You know, sometimes we underreact to things. I know everybody thinks that we're prisoner of the moment, but I do think sometimes, out of fear of being wrong, we don't react powerfully enough.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
If you're as obsessed with basketball as I am, then you know there's no better time of year than the NBA playoffs. Hey guys, this is JJ Redick. Twice a week, I'm cooking up something special for basketball junkies on my podcast, The Old Man and the Three. I bring on guests in all stages of their careers to talk about the league and share stories you won't hear anywhere else, like Devin Booker on why he talks so much trash, or Paolo Banchero on his shooting workouts with Kevin Durant, Ray Allen's epic free throw competitions with LeBron when they were teammates in Miami. But it's not just about the player interviews. Every Monday, I break down the top three things happening around the NBA without the outlandish takes. Often joined by masterminds of the game like Tim Legler, we dive deep into topics like rookie reports, trade breakdowns, and why is meme mugging now a tech? The Old Man and the Three is the only companion podcast you'll need during the playoffs this year. Be sure to listen to The Old Man and the Three ad-free on Wondery Plus or wherever you get your podcasts.
I don't know what you're saying here, that like by him doing well after he got traded, that Presti shouldn't have done the trade?
No, I'm just saying that was a confirmation. You were saying okay, skip. Yeah. I was saying that was a confirmation that he was that good. If you were following the train of conversation that we were having, it made complete sense.
I wasn't following. Sorry.
It's okay. Is Aaron Gordon good?
I think he is. I think he's the kind of good that, if he's on a good team, it is a lot more apparent than if he's on a bad team. He is in many ways a poor, 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 destitute man's Draymond Green.
Mm. Wow.
Not in terms of the same type of player, but the same, not in like same style of play, but the same type of player. You put me on with bad players and you're going to say, well, what's the big deal with this guy? You put me on with good players and I will show you how good I am. Because first of all, he's got to be a four. He's got to accept that he's a power forward. He's not a wing, right? He can put the ball on the floor. He can play make a little, right?
Yeah.
He can shoot a little.
He can put the ball on the floor, but he shouldn't, but he can.
No, not shouldn't.
I mean, as the way they were using him as a
point guard. Yeah, exactly. Not like that. Exactly. He could put the ball on foot. Not like that, right? You know, it reminds me of my buddy Andrew Schultz when he did his pandemic kind of videos. You got to turn your phone sideways, which I guess they turned into a Netflix special. Sometimes he's a funny
comedian, by the way.
Yes, very funny. So he'll say something, and then the overhead picture will be a double entendre of what he just said. And, you know, in the middle of him talking, you need to oh, not like that though. He'll correct the overhead with, you know, very quickly in the middle of his thing. So same thing with Aaron Gordon. He needs to have the ball in his hands and create off the dribble. Not like that though. Not bringing the ball up the floor.
No.
That's where he's not Draymond. But from an elbow being guarded by another power forward, yes, absolutely, he can take advantage of that and make plays and shoot a little. And obviously,
he would be great in that Draymond 4-on-3 kind of situation.
Yeah. Yep. Great. And pick and roll, and then he's the roll man, but then you give it to him, and then as you dump it, now he's making plays. Am I hitting the corner man? Am I throwing a lob to the other big? Am I hitting the other corner man? Am I coming back? And we'll do another dribble handoff. Like, he can do all that stuff, right? And then shoot and finish above the rim, obviously. Those are two things Draymond can't do. He shoots way better than Draymond, and he finishes, obviously, a million times better. And then he's shown in the past the ability to defend, right?
I've got questions about that. And
you don't think
so? I'm not going to pretend like I'm an expert with defense, especially. It's if I haven't watched a guy a tremendous amount, I'm just not that confident making a call on it. No, I'm not watching a ton of Orlando Magic games. But when a guy has a reputation as a defensive ace, like he had at Arizona and to a degree in the NBA, but he doesn't force a lot of turnovers, I'm not saying he's bad at defense. But I've got some questions, and then related to that, there's something interesting going on where we really love the athleticism from Aaron Gordon, and he clearly has the ability to jump high, but if that athleticism's not manifesting in you getting blocks, you getting steals, and I think I was looking at it, I think on two-pointers, he doesn't hit over half his two-point shots. I start to wonder, is this the player we're imagining, or is this the player that actually exists?
Well, I mean, a couple of things. I've talked about this before with you, that blocks and steals, while a very handy heuristic, are not exactly, I don't use those as a metric. And if I did, like Hassan Whiteside, we wouldn't be the best defensive players in the league.
I would say you can be good as a defensive player without them.
Yes.
But I don't think you can be great without bringing that to the table.
Well, I don't think he's great, though. I think he's a good defensive player. And that, again, that goes back to poor, poor, poor man Draymond, because he's not as good as a playmaker. He's not as good of a rebounder. He's not as good of a defensive player. He's not as smart of a player. And that's not a knock on Aaron Gordon. It's more of lauding Draymond. But in terms of, does he help me? Does he help the Nuggets, a team that is bereft of defense? Absolutely. Absolutely.
To be clear, I like the deal for them. I just have questions. I just have questions is all. I mean,
two things you got to remember. We talk about Aaron Gordon. One, he's 25 years old, right? Doesn't turn 26 until September. Two, I don't know if you've looked it up, but do you know how much money he makes?
How much?
He makes 18 this year. He makes 16 next year. Like that, just financially, a 25-year-old forward who averages somewhere in the neighborhood of 20 points per 36 minutes and is a reasonably skilled player who makes 18 and 16. I don't know what the argument is against him. Now, is he an all-star? No, but is he more ready to help you win right now than Michael Porter Jr.? You bet your ass.
Is he a Tillman Fertitta all-star? Yeah, I think he could potentially qualify for that. And
what's a Tillman Fertitta all-star?
I don't know. The stretch definition of all-star is what I'm doing.
Well, the stretch definition of all-star is Tillman Fertitta all-star is someone who's an all-star. What?
Like, he's a washed-up all-star.
Jamal McGlure is a Tillman Fertitta all-star. You know, you got an all-star.
Nice pull. That's a good reference. I would add a third thing to what you're listing about the enticingness of one Aaron Gordon. And he's a good qualifier for, and it's another Bill James term, post-type superstar. You know, you've got these guys. There's a lot of hype. They've got a lot of potential. They're drafted to a terrible organization or situation. And so maybe you get in there, you swoop in, like those agents, who get in not on the rookie contract, but on the next contract. And
Bill
maybe
James
you'll
calls
see
it a
the real
superstar. That's his term.
Bose type superstar. Yeah.
That's a terrible, like, that's Bill James, clearly not a writer. We call it the second draft. That's what people call the second draft.
I'm looking it up to see that I'm not slandering him, and he actually calls it that right there. I mean, what's wrong with post-type?
It's just, no, post-type superstar is just so wordy.
Maybe post-type star?
Still wordy. Three words to describe this thing? Two or less. Two or less, damn it.
Or maybe it's just post-type. And maybe I just invented that. I mean, I'm not sure. I don't know anymore. I'm lost in a sea of trades right now. I might get sued for defamation.
Is he alive? Is Bill James alive?
I believe Bill James is alive. He was born in 1949, according to Wikipedia.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So he's a boomer, but he's still with us. But yeah, the concept still stands. Whatever the semantics, this idea that you can sometimes really capitalize on, as you say, a second draft, might apply to Aaron Gordon. And quite a few guys out there. Although you don't see it, does it happen that often? How many examples of that do we have? We mentioned Oladipo earlier. He's a guy who could fit that bill earlier in his career. But how many others?
Chauncey Billups.
Ooh, that's a good one. It's a good pull right there.
The
great Andrew Wiggins. Just kidding.
Robert Parrish.
Robert Parrish, you're going historical. I was thinking you would go more recent than that.
You want people in the league right now? All right, let me take a look. I always like looking at the standings. That jogs my memory. Julius Randle starting that way.
Okay. Okay. That's a Tillman Fertitta all-star too.
Yeah, absolutely. Chris Middleton, although he wasn't really a star, he just kind of came into his own. He was a second round pick, so I guess he wasn't highly touted. James Harden.
Yeah. Although that's not second. I mean, that's second draft in the sense that you're benefiting from the team's draft pick, but he was good. I'm thinking of this organization stinks and they get out of that organization.
Jimmy Butler.
There. Okay. Okay.
I got more.
It happens. Okay.
I got more. The Sabonis. Yeah. Kyle Lowry.
That's a good one.
Kawhi Leonard?
Kawhi Leonard? That's not, no, that one doesn't count.
I was pushing it with that one. Okay, I get it.
Yeah, that's a little bit, it's a little bit much.
I was pushing. All right, okay.
I feel like it's not the organization that will improve Gordon so much as Jokic. I think
I think it's not organization, it's just the supporting cast.
But it should be mentioned, you know, we talked about Oklahoma City for a while, Orlando Magic, that was Oklahoma City before Oklahoma City. That was the Thunder of the 1990s. They've been in the wilderness for a while, post-White. And now it seems like they're blowing it up again, and it's another rebuild. What the hell is happening out there? I know that they're not big market, but they are a substantial. I mean, there's something I associate with the NBA. They've had some big moments, and it seems like nobody cares that they've been marooned for over a decade.
Nobody cares. Orlando's a small market.
Yeah.
I don't care if Disney's there. They're not a big market team. They've enjoyed success in the past because they've got a fun name and fun jerseys and they've had fun teams, right?
Yeah.
In the same way that Charlotte was a team that had broad appeal back in the 90s, right?
Dude, I saw an all-star game intro from the mid-90s in Charlotte, and the way they were talking about the basketball crazies of Charlotte, North Carolina, look at this crowd, they're insane for basketball here. And it was just, oh my God, really? There was, I remember Flat Top, Alonzo Mourning, and Grandmama and everything else, but it's weird that is another situation where it was big and everybody loved it, and then everybody just forgot about basketball in Charlotte one day.
Yeah, no, it's not. You know what happened, right? Do you not know the story?
Them taking the team away and everything else.
Here's what happened. So the owner, George Shin, was a guy who was skimping on the team, right? Because he wanted a new building. And the city of Charlotte wouldn't give it to him, or wouldn't fund him or whatever. And so he skimped on the team to make it lesser than. Also, he had like some real problematic lawsuits and legal stuff that was happening. I believe it was, hold on, let me just look up George. You can delete this part.
It's fine. I'm just reminded of Baron Davis saying to somebody that, you know, people judge my career and say I didn't live up to my potential, but
here we go.
I've played for the worst owners in all of basketball. Look at the track record.
So, September 16th, 1997, this is from the AP. Woman accuses Hornets owner of kidnapping, sexual assault. A 28-year-old woman has accused Charlotte Hornets owner George Shinn of kidnapping and sexually assaulting her in his home, according to a search warrant released Tuesday. Shinn has not been charged. Police searched Shin's lakefront home last week, the search warrant says. And it goes on from there. So there was like a lot of shit that was going on with this dude. And this was a community that loved the team. But I think we don't fault anybody for saying, I don't want to pay for a new building, particularly for a dude who's
kidnapping women.
Yeah, some real fucked up shit. So I remember, Ethan, I went to the last game ever played by the Charlotte Hornets. It was a playoff game. They're playing the New Jersey Nets. And I don't know if you've ever been to the old Charlotte Coliseum, the Hive, right? It sits on top of a hill. And around the hill is the parking lot, right? Like around the arena on the slopes of the hill. And so I went to this game, and this parking lot was full. And when I tell you, there must have been about 80,000 people outside the arena. I mean, it was shoulder to shoulder. Signs talking about fuck you, George Shinn, and all this stuff, right? I went inside the arena, and it was empty. These people loved the team enough to show up to the arena, but hated the owner enough to say, we're not going to give him a single dollar. There might have been like 4,000 people in that building. And that was a big coliseum. That wasn't like the arenas they're building now, which is like 18.5 with a bunch of luxury seats, luxury boxes. This was 23, 24. Think of a United Center, that kind of size, right? And so, and every, like scattered in the crowd, you just see signs. And the signs obviously were the ones they would let you come in with, not the fuck George Shinn ones. But they were more benign, like, don't, you know, like a little kid, like, this is the only team I've ever known. Don't break my heart. They had at the type of the 100 section where there was like the arena signage said, go Hornets, go. They put signs over the go that says, stay Hornets, stay. It was the saddest shit ever, because most of the time when a team leaves, you're thinking, fuck, they don't give a shit about that shit anyway. Who cares? And it was clear, like, the people of Charlotte wanted it to be known. We love the Hornets. We love the NBA. We just don't like that dude. And the NBA protected that dude and allowed him to move. And by the way, he was broke too, because they allowed him to move to New Orleans, which we've talked about, whether, regardless of it being a wonderful, lovely city to visit and explore and experience, is not a big enough financial base to support more than one professional sports team. And so they went to New Orleans and they died. They died, right? They died as an organization until they brought it back. By the time Charlotte, the Bobcats first, and then changing back into the Hornets, by the time they came back, they already broke everybody's heart. And it was a generation of people who grew up without the NBA, and that was it. And then Carolina Panthers obviously had shown up in the meanwhile, and Carolina Hurricanes had shown up in the meanwhile, and that's it. You had a foothold in that area, and you lost it because you were supporting a piece of shit, right? And the same thing we've seen play out in Seattle is financial. Because the thing is, Charlotte, there's money, right? There's banking in Charlotte, and then you've got like the is it called the Golden Triangle? Whatever it is.
I don't know.
But it's like...
Are we talking about Tom Haberstroh's house? Yeah. What are we talking about?
No, we're talking about like, you know, like Raleigh, Durham.
By the way, it's such a different culture out there. When I visited Tom, everybody's got some SEC college football flag on their house in the neighborhood. Everybody, when you just go on down the neighborhood, it's like, oh, there's the Ole Miss house. It's like, oh, there's the... It's a different America, I mean. But you were saying.
Yeah, so... there's a lot of tech and a lot of banking and stuff there. So there's money, right? There's money enough for your season ticket holders. There's companies
located down there that'll, you know, be your sponsors and all that stuff. And there was a rabid fan base. Same thing in Seattle. You had all these big companies there, whether it was Microsoft, whether it was Boeing, whether it was even like Google, which isn't based there, but they've got a campus there, Amazon, et cetera. You had this, I believe Seattle, this might have changed now with the rise of the Bay Area, but at the time, Seattle had the highest per capita of any city in America.
Yeah.
Like per capita income.
They're getting back there, but yeah.
But like, I mean, it's an affluent place. And most importantly, these are people who are diehard. They love that team. And the league said, but they got a new arena here and that's it. And just basically to strong arm some municipality into forking over money for a billionaire to have his plaything house. I mean, it's kind of ridiculous.
Well, the NBA was, I think, in this epoch. Sorry, I cut you off. What was the point you're going to make?
No, I'm just saying, like, we reap what we sow, basically. Mm-hmm. And we sowed the seeds of prioritizing things that weren't what's best for business in the big picture for things that were best for business in the very, very small picture.
I was interrupting you to make the point you're precisely making, which is I think they were penny wise, pound foolish during the 1990s. They went anywhere and everywhere that would give them a new arena because that's cash up front. That's really quick. But they were entering an era in which television rights would explode. And guess what? You get a lot more money when you're a team where people live versus where people don't live. Relatively. So, yeah, okay, no arena maybe. Maybe you got to pay it out of pocket in Seattle, but there are so many people who live there. Plus, you got the luxury boxes and all the money. You're probably going to make a lot of money over time, even if it's privately financed. And the NBA got stuck in a weird situation where it's the smallest market league of the major sports, which is counterintuitive because culturally it is not that. So it's very strange.
But here's the funny part about Seattle, right? You allowed it to be sold to someone who took it to a very small market, which could not generate enough income for them to run the team with the type of financial budget required, particularly given the talent base it had. And because of their financial constraints, because they weren't rich enough and they moved it to a place that would not allow them to be rich enough, they could not keep together a team that should have been a dynasty. You see how that goes? That whole thread brings us back to how the fuck does Harden not stay? Harden doesn't stay because on July 1, they didn't say, here's the max.
Yeah.
They dilly-dallied long enough for him to go.
I'm sensitive to the concerns of Thunder fans, though. They did do a great job overall of the organization.
No, they did a great job given the financial ceiling they had to deal with.
Mm-hmm.
Because if Sam Presti, and I think Sam Presti is one of the best GMs in the league. I hear people kill him all the time, and I don't understand it. But if Sam Presti doesn't have his own, like, how much you want to spend? What? Like, if he's not dealing with that, July 1 or whenever they say, here you go, James. We think of you as every bit the superstar as KD and Russ, and we want you to be here together and win championships and retire your jersey, and here's all the money that anyone could ever offer you. Harden would be like, cool. He goes to the Olympics. He comes back. He might be like, shit, I'm a lot better than I thought. Well, I guess I'm glad they believed in me. Instead, he's coming back like, fuck this shit. I don't give a fuck what you pay me, right? By the way, along those same lines, right? I think about like where I was in Phoenix, where we had Joe Johnson. And Joe Johnson, we offered, I wasn't there yet, but the extension they offered Joe was 42.5 over 7. Joe wanted like 45 or 47 or something. It might have been even 50.
Yeah.
It came out to like literally like about $1 million a year difference or something. So it was 50. It was $1 million a year difference. Instead of paying him 6 and some change, he wanted 7 and some change. And they balked. And so he had the season of a lifetime. And at the end of it, it's like, peace out. I'm good enough to be a franchise player, a max player somewhere. Even if you try to match, which is what he told them, don't match it. I don't want to be here anymore. Because what's happened is the confirmation has happened in his head. Oh, yeah, I'm every bit as good as I thought I was.
By the way, second draft, Joe Johnson.
Hey, Joe Johnson, there you go.
Yeah, originally drafted, I guess, played for the Celtics first.
Boston.
Trying to even remember.
Played half a season in Boston, got traded. Do you know who he got traded for?
Who?
To get to Phoenix? Because whoever was in charge of the Celtics at the time, they wanted to get aggressive because they thought they had themselves some Rodney Rogers.
Oh, Rodney Rogers.
Yep.
Wow.
Rodney Rogers.
You know, speaking of Danny Ainge, I've got another take. I feel like Danny Ainge's quixotic quests for superstars, and we almost would have made that deal, and the way he's talked about NBA Twitter, it's kind of obscure that the Celtics largely have done a pretty good job, I think, over the last decade. I like the Fournier addition. I like how – I know this has been a rocky season, but I like how Stevens tends to put guys in a position to succeed and takes advantage of what they do. They need that kind of they need that kind of scoring punch outside of the wings. They didn't get Anthony Davis, right? It broke their hearts that they didn't get Anthony Davis and a bunch of other guys that they wanted to get. But they've cultivated this excellent wing tandem. I think this is another good move on top of that. I think there's a little bit maybe too much criticism of old Danny Ainge. And I say that as somebody, I do not have a rapport with him. I'm not, you know, protecting anybody.
This is just my opinion. I don't know anything about Danny Ainge. I've never met him.
Which, by the way, insinuates that you do run cover for the people you do know.
Yeah, that's when you clarify like that, that means like anytime.
By the way, I don't even want to get digressive on this, but you know how we talked about the Drew Schiller and Broglio on Tom Haberstroh thing.
Has there been any like feedback or blowback or anything that?
I noticed that there were some fans whose reaction was, well, of course, journalists circling the wagons. Like that was the thing that we were protecting our fellow media scum. I didn't anticipate that.
While we were recording that, I kept thinking to myself, man, if I'm Drew Schiller, I must feel like shit. Like these guys, I felt like we piled on them.
Well, look, just the fact that we all thought, hey, you know, Steve kind of meant what Schiller, Steve's subtext actually was the subtext that Schiller made in the text. It was just amazing to me to think that we have some omerta where we see a fellow media member getting attacked and
I've never met the guy, so.
and I have, and I got nothing against him, but this idea that I would want to risk offending Steve Kerr for the consideration of fellow media man Schiller is just that's a funny conclusion to me. But look, you never know how people are going to react to these things. So the Fournier edition, the Celtics, your thoughts?
Decent, but I'm going to hold Danny Ainge accountable for the idea that you had Miles Turner and Doug McDermott in the bag for a player that wasn't even going to be on your roster, that you knew guaranteed wasn't going to be on your roster. And the insights that came back to me after that deal evaporated because Hayward ended up changing his mind saying he wanted to go to Charlotte instead was that they weren't that impressed with Miles Turner.
Ha. Huh.
It was like, I'm like, oh, I'm sorry. they made their bed.
Mm.
They made their bed. Mm. Credit him, he took ownership, right? About a month ago or so, I said, this isn't a championship team, and that's not Brad's fault. That's my fault. I haven't given him the pieces. So I guess I'll give him credit for that, but like,
It's a lot of security for a GM
got too
to say
cute.
That.
Got too cute. Got the. Well, I mean, he's got the security though. He's not gonna get fired, but because he's good. He's done a great job overall, like in his tenure. But having said that, it's okay for us to say you got too cute. You try to be too cute, trying to say, "Oh, I want either T.J. Warren or what's his name, or Oladipo in this deal, whatever." And you know, while you were trying to be cute, Bartlestein, who is Gordon Hayward's agent, was working a side deal over here.
with a team that, you know, I talked to Buzz Peterson, who's the assistant GM for the Hornets. And he talked about, man, this wasn't something that just came up. This was a guy that Michael had liked for years. Because when his first contract got done in Utah, remember, he didn't sign an extension in Utah. He signed an offer sheet with the Charlotte Hornets that Utah ended up matching. The offer sheet had an option after 3 years. That's why he left Utah as soon as he did and became a free agent and went to Boston and played those 4 years in Boston. And here we are. But again, this is a case of Danny got too cute, much in the same way that, you know, Pat Riley might have been too naive when he paid Hassan Whiteside and James Johnson and Deion Waiters a bunch of money. They're not perfect. They make mistakes. Jerry West is the greatest of all time, da da da. And also, he gave Cesare Trebanski a bunch of money and traded for Troy Bell and paid Brian Cardinal a bunch of money. They all fuck up, man. Bob Myers. Yeah, he amnestied Charlie Bell. They all fuck up. There's not a single person in this game who's, oh, done it again. It's Pop. They ran off Kawhi Leonard. They all fuck up, man. Danny fucked up. But yeah, 40 is a nice player. I mean, is that going to change the fact that they're one of the most stagnant offenses in the league? No.
It's probably not enough for them. Do you buy that the Blazers have made some sort of important moves for themselves, or is it reshuffling deck chairs mostly?
I think it's mostly reshuffling deck chairs. They traded two.
I got a more meta question, and maybe we'll no. Give the Blazer take, and then we'll get to Raptors.
I was gonna say, look, they gave up two rotation players for one. Now Norm Powell might be better than either of those guys, but I think Gary Trent's a better defensive player than Norm Powell is. And the Blazers are, if not for the existence of the Sacramento Kings, historically atrocious defensively. Mm-hmm. Now you might say, hey, we're so bad defensively, it doesn't even matter anymore. But I think having guys like Gary Trent matters. It matters.
Yeah.
And again, this isn't a knock on Norm Powell. This is, by the way, he's a guy who's going to want a lot of money in the offseason. So anyways.
Yeah. That's I feel my overall Blazer take for years is they never made the hard decision of which point guard sized star scorer to really go with. And that's the source of a lot of their good.
Well, I think they found the balance that 3-4 years ago when that was a topic of conversation, it was not apparent that they would find it. So they found that balance. But that balance needs to be counterbalanced by the other three dudes got to be all world defensively. And the problem is they don't have that. And I don't know that Norm Powell addresses that at all. And it almost feels like they're saying, you know what? Fuck it. We ain't going to stop anybody, so we might as well go all in.
So let's close out on the Raptors. Why, beyond Powell being available, it seemed like suddenly everybody was available. They've been playing in Tampa. What's going on there? Why was there suddenly such a just complete, you know, hey, there might be a fire sale here sensibility. Hey, franchise favorites might be flying out the door. Hey, you might get a second draft potential on Siakam. What's going on out there where it generated so much buzz without ultimately really delivering?
Are you asking why they found themselves in this position, or are you asking?
I'm asking whatever takes that you can give me to have me make sense of the 2019 radio champions.
You're doing the radio thing where you just want me to talk about them.
Yeah, okay. That's exactly, because you're a great talker. Is that a crime? Is that a crime that I allow you to do what you're so good at doing? I think not.
Okay, so 13 games ago, this team was 16-15, right?
Yeah.
Which would have put them, let's see here, win percentage-wise, what would that put them? Or actually, you know what? Let me see this. Well, again, this is another pause for the cause right here. I need to get to, where is it, scores? And then go to 13 games ago, so it'll be March. What's the, oops, no,
How is the voice going to Barry White levels right now as you figure things out? Is that what happens when you do math?
It's not math. It's doing some rough calendar work here to get to the place where I want to be. Here we go. It's a couple of days before that. So 21st. Let's try that. Where are we? There we go. February 21st. The Toronto Raptors are 1, 2, 3, fourth in the East at 16-15. Fast forward March 25th, so basically a month later, they go 2-11 in those games. They have a net rating of -6, which is fourth worst in the league. And that's it. Death blow. You got to know when to hold them, know when to fold them. This is a team that was ravaged by COVID. It's not like they went 2-11 because they're bad, but they went 2-11 because, you know, COVID hit them, coaching staff, players, everything. And in that time, it all fell apart. And so you got to say to yourself, Kyle Lowry is, and I know he didn't get traded ultimately, but Kyle Lowry is now 35 years old. Or is he 34? Did he just turn 34? Lowry. His birthday is
March 25th. Memory.
March 25th. So he's 35. He turned 35 today.
Happy birthday, Kyle Lowry. It's your birthday. Somebody in here, it's your birthday.
It's your birthday. Somebody in here, yeah. It's your birthday. 35 years old.
6 feet tall.
6 feet tall. Right? Not exactly an explosive athlete. Coming off of $30.5 million contract. His cap hole for next year is $39 million. Norman Powell makes 10 and some change, has a player option for 11 and some change for next year. He's almost certainly going to opt out. This thing has reached the end of its line. And so the Raptors did the thing where you look in the mirror and you say, who am I? Am I a couple of tweaks away from shocking the world again? Fans want to believe that.
Yeah,
but if you're being realistic, you realize you're not. And so how do we salvage whatever value today so that our tomorrow is a little bit
more resourced? Other thing. And if you're Masai, there's a lot of job security in starting a rebuild, especially where he's starting it. If you go, look, you can't say I'm a bum or I don't know what I'm doing. I built a championship roster. Nobody ever thought Toronto would win a championship. I did it. So maybe I should be able to blow it up, make this thing in my own image, and have 5 years to do it. I mean, I do think that GM's in the right situation. I guess ultimately he didn't totally do it, but there is a powerful incentive sometimes to begin that process because you get a lot of life out of it versus if you're bringing high expectations to your owner immediately.
Yeah, I guess, but I don't think he has to. I think he's a made man now. He's like Danny. He's like Pat down in Miami. He's like, who else is a made man like that? It's like RC. It's a made man. They don't have to
Bob Myers, not a made man, it seems.
Not a made man. Not a made man. Not
you know why? Man. He never branded himself. I have a theory that.
RC never branded himself. I guess people did that for him.
Yeah, yeah. I think Bob, I think with Bob.
Presti's a made man too, by the way.
Bob's not very active in the media scene. I mean, he's got his reporters he likes. He's somebody you can have a very interesting conversation with. But he's, for an agent, oddly a little introverted. And I don't think he likes to do the shaking hands, kissing babies routine, and I don't think he likes to do some of the media myth building that some do, and maybe that's a credit to him, but the issue then is it does perhaps impact your legacy if you're not really communicating, hey, I did this, hey, this was part of my philosophy. And with GMs especially, I think having ideas attached to the reputation is a big deal. That's how you can be a famous GM and never win a championship.
I am the president of basketball.
If you have to, and I don't think there's anybody to blame, but I get it. That stuff happens. I hope nobody does. I don't think it should land on anybody. But if you feel like you need to.
I don't know. I don't think Presti did that, though. Do you think Presti did that?
Presti's, I think, excellent. I want to be careful here because I know that he has a lot of genuine friendships with people in media. I would say it this way. Presti has a lot more media relationships than Bob does.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, wow.
Not even close. Not
you think
even close.
So? You have Bob as a guy who's kind of arm's length.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
a superficial, like basically.
Not superficial.
What you're telling me is Bob's relationship with me is pretty much his relationship with that. I just figured I wasn't on the inside. It's like, well, it was, hey, I mean, how's it going? And that's it. Like, that's the extent of our relationship, right? I just figured, like, that's just me. You're telling me he does that to everybody.
Yeah, he's not the kind of guy to take the beat writers out to lunch, as some GMs do, or out to dinner to just shoot the shit off the record.
Not even Summer League?
Not even Summer League?
Look, I'm not saying that he would reject the offer, but I don't think that he's not actively. There are a lot of media members.
He's not doing the Donnie Nelson. I ever tell you the Donnie Nelson story?
What's the Donnie Nelson story?
At Summer League, I'm walking to Thomas and Mac into the tunnel. And I guess that was like the Mavs were getting ready to play, or they were out there playing whatever. And Donnie Nelson is there and he's got his sons with him. And Donnie's like, he does the Coming to America. Oh my goodness, it is you! But like, sincerely.
I cannot believe it. Yeah.
And then like, grabs his son. His son's like 15 or whatever. Like, on his phone, texting like, it's one of those, leave me alone, dad. But he's like, do you know who this is? This is one of the foremost. Da, 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 da. And I'm just like, I'm like Akeem in Coming to America. I just kind of feel awkward because I was walking to the bathroom. I'm like, oh, yeah. Hey, good seeing you again, Donnie. And I'm like, okay, yeah, nice to meet you. And then I just kind of left because I was like, what the fuck is going on? You're saying Bob doesn't do that?
No, not that.
Shout out to Donnie Nelson.
I'm not saying there's nothing.
I like Donnie. I just want to make it clear that I'm not shitting on Donnie or saying what the fuck was that about? It caught me off guard, right?
No, I think Bob's a good guy. When I got fired, Bob called me up.
He's a good teammate.
He's a good person.
It's not fair.
You know, he's not completely aloof, is what I would say. I just don't think that – I don't think he plays the game. I would say that much. And to my mind, I'm not even saying playing the game is an indictment. If you're a GM, if you're an executive, by all means, play the game. I love you.
Maybe it's
call
a,
me
it
up.
An indictment. Is it an indictment of Bob?
Is it an indictment of Bob? It depends on perspective. If you believe that your job as a GM should be to stay out of the way and not make yourself the story and that you're going to cause problems if you're really puffing your chest out and making it about you, then you're saying Bob handles it exactly right. But maybe it really helps an organization if there's some mythology attached to the general manager, right? And people think, hey, steady ship, and this guy is in charge, and I want to play for this organization. I don't know. As a media member, I want guys to be as open and talkative and calling me as possible. But I don't think it's really my place to judge and say that's the wrong move or that's the right move.
Now, I know, you know, when his career was in full swing, it was kind of before your rise, but was he like that as an agent? Because I feel like agents have to do that shit, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And Bob,
well, I don't think
some,
I don't
he represented
think
some be, pretty big players, you know?
Being an agent never really fit for him. He was miserable as an agent.
But
he clearly
did enough to get big name players and then to get those big name players big time contracts.
Yeah. Well, I think that
or
he
that,
worked
or,
his ass off.
Or was that
I,
all
I interviewed him about the I
he
interviewed
the
him. Yeah, he did. I mean, Arn Tellem, for those who are listening and don't know, absolute power agent. Yeah.
I call him Soldier Boy Tellem. Yeah,
Jesus Christ. Yeah. Dadamine. Thanks for that, Dadamine.
Thank you.
Absolute power agent who was, I think Bob became his right-hand man, and Bob was supposed to take over. He was the protege, And I think he might have broken Aaron's heart over a dinner in LA by saying, I'm going to leave and I'm going to become GM of the Warriors. I think that's one of the reasons why Aaron Tellem left his business, if I'm totally reading between the lines. But yeah, I think that he did those things. He schmoozed that schmooze, but it never really fit for him in his personality. And that's why he traded the most miserable profession, which is being an agent, for the second most miserable, which is being a GM.
Yeah, I mean, is being a GM more miserable than being a coach? I feel like at least you have some sort of job security as a GM.
Yeah, but I think being a coach, you're in the pit and you're living life, man. And it's that misery that's addictive and it's active and it's adrenaline. You so rarely meet happy GMs, though. I will say I've talked about that with Daryl Morey, and Daryl Morey says he's really happy.
Daryl Morey now. Or did you talk about this with him when he was in Houston?
I did. I did talk when he was still fishing. Lying.
I think it's clear he was lying, right?
I mean,
right?
I don't
the dude
know.
Said I'm retiring to spend time with my family. And like a month later, he got another job. If that ain't my fucking lying, I don't know what. I mean, I don't blame him. Like I'd do the same thing if I were him too, but still. Like the can't yeah. tell me he was happy.
Yeah, I mean, happy being a GM in general.
Who's that on the scale? Like, if we're grading on a curve, who do you think is the happiest GM in the league?
I would have said Daryl right now.
No,
not Daryl. Happiest GM in the league,
dude. There's only one answer to this, and it's pretty obvious.
Palinka?
Palinka's pretty happy. I'll give him that. Palinka's up there. But he also has headaches. I'm going to tell you a guy.
Yeah, dealing with LeBron is a headache. Yeah.
No, it's Masai. Masai, here's the reasons. Number one, and this is the thing that a lot of people don't understand. The Toronto Raptors are like the basketball team at the University of Texas. Just don't embarrass us, but also you're not the show. The company they're owned is literally named after the other team. Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment. That's how you know. It's like, it's not like Tannenbaum Sports and Entertainment after the guy who's in charge, like the chairman, Larry Tannenbaum, right? It's not Toronto Sports and Entertainment. No, it's Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment. The hockey team is the most important thing and the only thing those guys care about. And they make more money than God because they are the Knicks of Canada, the Maple Leafs, right?
Yeah.
This thing where like your dad or maybe your grandfather remembers when they were good, but they haven't done shit, but we're going to all walk around like another Stanley Cup is right around the corner.
Yeah. And it's even amplified because of that country's neurosis when it comes to that city and how – it's like unquestionably the main city of that country.
Oh yeah.
And the rest of the country resents that city, but they also have like a connection to that city. The whole thing's crazy.
So it's exactly like New York. Toronto is the New York of Canada. The Maple Leafs are the Knicks of Canada. And the Raptors are like the little brother team that as long as you just don't embarrass us, we're good. And so Masai gets there, not only does he make them competitive, he win a fucking championship. He swings a big dick deal and makes a championship happen and then follows that up with a really strong dude. That guy can blow this shit up and have the Raptors bad for 10 years. He ain't gonna lose his job. He's like, he's done. He is a made man.
We're both part of the same hypocrisy.
So he's the happiest, but dealing with every trade and everything, there's still a lot of headaches.
I know, of course, yes, but we're grading on the curve of people in that profession. Who's giving him a hard? You think Kyle Lowry's chewing him out? You think MLSE is? Hey, I thought you said we were going to be in the playoff. No, they're like, what's wrong with the Maple Leafs? That's all they're worried about. hey, the Raptors need. Yeah, do whatever you want. Well, we're trying to figure out where we should trade Norm. Whatever. Who?
I just can't get it out of my mind. We've talked about the podcast before, but that moment, that first blast of offense in Game 5 of the 2019 NBA Finals when Durant returned. And the Warriors look like a fully operational death machine right there. And then there's the timeout break, and I go to the restroom, and I just remember hearing the Raptor fans talk amongst themselves. Just the most negative fatalism I've ever heard in the first quarter.
They're the Knicks, man.
Oh, well, it was a good run, boys, but looks like it's not going to be success this year. Oh, well, buddy. It was resignation. And then, of course, Durant's Achilles explodes and things go the way they go. But it was completely, we're doomed. It's over. We're done.
Because the Maple Leafs taught them. This is the generation of people who grew up that shit happens and it wasn't meant for us. Right? No matter how much shit they talk, when it starts to turn, they know. That feeling in their pit is they're very well accustomed to. The dude overcame that shit, man. You know what it reminded me of? What you're talking about? Remember that first Cavs-Warriors series? When they're up 2-1 in the series,
and they're up in game
four, and Curry hits two threes, they call timeout, and the PA announcer says, ladies and gentlemen, there is absolutely no reason to panic.
Remain calm. There's no reason to panic. But that's why I think it was so explosively joyous for both those franchises when they did ultimately beat the big bad Warriors. There was never the feeling of belief.
Well, it's not that they didn't believe they could win. It's that they believe that something awful was right around the corner. That's what they believe in. And they're often right. You are the guy that breaks that curse, as David Griffin was in Cleveland. Now, the difference is, in Cleveland, you got an owner who thinks he knows his shit and is very meddling and on top of shit, right? And has his own insecurities that he's dealing with. In Toronto, Masai works for an owner who's literally like, that's cute, man. All right, man, here's some more money. All right, cool.
it's like rich Jerry Reinsdorf. Reinsdorf. I don't know why I add another syllable. Rich Jerry Reinsdorf.
Yeah, it's like, you know, man, like, I've got bigger fish to fry over here. These fucking Maple Leafs.
I don't know why they're from New York all of a sudden. These fucking Maple Leafs.
Look at this guy right here.
Hey.
Bush. Oh. Oh.
And on that note, Amin, thanks for stopping by, even though highly combative. I have a theory. I think you were very combative. That you were combative because you sent me a Google Doc that you put a lot of thought into, and I didn't update the Google Doc. That's my theory.
Honestly, I forgot all about that. I was thinking about, we didn't send a Google Doc over this, and I remembered. No, it wasn't. It's because I'll tell you what threw me off. It was the call. The call I got earlier, it put me in a bad mood. And also because I don't recognize the number, and I'm like, who is that?
Well, you rallied, and you delivered a powerful podcast. And I want to give a big thank you to all the NBA fans. Hopefully your teams make good deals. I want to give a big thank you to Jade Hoy, who brilliantly produces 80 podcasts or whatever he does for us. It's absolutely unbelievable. Victory Machine, out in paperback. Snap it up. Buy it. Everybody, stay safe out there. Enjoy the springtime. Enjoy this runway into the postseason. See ya.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.